strategies for navigating the post-college job market. What's the employment market like for a new college grad? Well, it depends on your perspective and which headlines you read. Some tout the best job climate for new grads since the recession, which is true. According to the New York Fed, job postings for this group are up 10%. However, other reports point out that unemployment is still higher and wages are still lower for new college grads than in the years before the recession. In any case, a new crop of well-educated and eager young people are stepping into the real world this spring, and they are on the hunt. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn from experts good strategies for new college grads. We'll also turn to Mal Leary in Augusta for an update on the state budget negotiations. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. And from the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. For graduating college seniors, it can be the best and the worst of times. After 4 years of study, or maybe more, the work of being a student is over, and time to put into practice what you've learned. Finding a job can be more difficult than studying for an organic chemistry test or finishing your senior thesis. Today, we have three experts here to share tips and advice for finding that first career job. With me in our studio, Lisa Miller. She's the founder and chief career catalyst at C2C, College to Career. Prior to launching C2C, Lisa had a 25-year career with Hannaford Brothers Company. Meg Springer is Assistant Director of Career Planning at Bowdoin College, and David Chulo is with us. He's President of Career Management Associates, host of the HR Power Hour radio show, and President of Lincolnshire International. As always, we want to hear from you. What advice do you have for recent college grads? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. But before we delve into today's topic, we are going to check in with MPBN's Mal Leary in Augusta to learn the latest on the budget deal that was apparently reached between Republicans and Democrats. Mal, late last night, we heard there was a deal, but then that we wouldn't know details of that deal. It seems all very unusual.
It certainly is very unusual. Usually budgets are worked out by public votes in the Appropriations Committee. In this case, the four top legislative leaders, the President of the Senate, Mike Thibodeau, House Speaker Mark Eaves, the Republican floor leader in the House, Ken Fredette, and the Democratic floor leader in the Senate, Justin Alfond, have met privately for almost 2 weeks. And they finally worked out a deal late last night that they say they've all agreed on. Well, as you said, apparently we have a budget deal because the caucuses that we mentioned, the four caucuses of the legislature, have yet to vote on any of these. And they were just getting the details late last night and early this morning. And in speaking with some caucus members on both sides of the aisle, folks have some real concerns about the details, which were just released about a half hour ago. They include, discussed last night, there will be a change in the taxes of Maine people. We will see the sales tax stay the same with a few areas going up, but we will see an income tax decrease. The analysis done by the Maine Revenue Services shows that almost 600,000 Maine families will see a tax cut, but a little more than 100,000 Maine families will see a tax increase in their income taxes. So the real areas of dispute and have been under dispute for 2 weeks, Jennifer, was the taxes and welfare. Well, we still don't know what this agreement does for welfare. It says in the bullet points put out by the leaders, reform of food stamps, TANF, SSI for legal non-citizens. No details what that reform means.
Mal, so let me get this
straight.
All
that's got to be worked out.
Okay, and let me get this straight. Does this mean that the leadership has really bypassed the Appropriations Committee?
Leadership bypassed the Appropriations Committee. They reached this deal. None of these items have been voted on in the Appropriations Committee. They'll be voted on as an amendment to the budget bill on the floor today. I saw House Speaker Mark Eaves in the House Democratic Caucus this morning, which I had to crash, by the way. They weren't going to let me in. And he said they want to have this budget done and on the governor's desk tonight. The reason for that, of course, Jennifer, is the 10 days that the governor can take to veto it. So if you're going to have a budget in place before the end of the current budget, they've got to have a budget on his desk tonight or early tomorrow morning so that 10-day clock can run.
And Mal, before I let you go, does the leadership of the House and Senate believe that this is a veto-proof document?
That's the big question mark. And what I'm hearing back from the caucuses is it may or may not get that magic 101 votes in the House. A lot of Democrats are upset at what they call the reforms for welfare benefits for legal non-citizens. But conversely, some of the Republicans are very upset that the way the tax is being, there will be Maine families who see an increase in their income tax.
Okay, so, well, Mal Leary, our political...
You take the far right and the far left, both upset with this, Jennifer. It's going to be a real interesting vote later today.
Well, we will tune into Maine Things Considered tonight to hear what happens this afternoon. Thanks so much for taking the time to brief us, Mal.
Thank you.
And back to our topic today, helping recent college graduates find work. Lisa Miller, I'm going to start with you. What is your sort of number one piece of advice to a 22-year-old trying to find that first career job?
I think the biggest thing that I advise them is to spend a little bit of time pausing and reflecting about their natural strengths, what they're good at, and thinking about what they might want to do. Starting too quickly and rushing into a job search without giving it thought is usually not a good thing to do.
Interesting. And what do you think about taking a job that's not a career job to pay the bills while you're figuring it out?
If you need to do that, absolutely you should. If your economic circumstances warrant that you need a job, you should absolutely do that and continue looking. If you can afford to, I would advise spending at least 2 months trying to work full-time on finding a job, because it's one of those events that the effort you put in directly correlates to the effort you get out of it.
David Chulo, that's advice I've heard for people in different phases of their career. Spend, you know, make it a full-time job to look for a job.
No, it's true. And you do need to look at what you're doing. And what you've done matters. The reality is that your accomplishments is how you differentiate yourself from others. And whether it's accomplishments you did in school, accomplishments that you do outside of work in either a career area or a volunteer area, all that matters, because the employer is going to look at it and say, hey, they are doing something. They're not just sitting there watching TV, you know, social media punching. They're doing something, and all that matters in somebody looking for a job.
Okay. And turning to you, Meg Springer, I know that Bates College is known for its incredible liberal arts education, but liberal arts degrees don't often translate as easily into the job market as, say, an engineering degree or a business degree. What kind of advice do you give your students who are majoring in history, English, philosophy?
Right. And so just to quickly correct you, I'm from Bowdoin College.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Bowdoin is also famous for its...
What I would say along the lines of what both David and Lisa just said, to reassure students, your first job won't be your last job. And I think really, if you ask anyone out there in the working world what their career journeys have looked like, their first job wasn't their last. We're probably still all in process of our journeys. So I think that that gives the history major, the philosophy major, the English major permission to take the time to really carefully consider and explore what are your interests, what are your passions, what do you enjoy doing? And then getting out there. So I recently heard a phrase, action creates opportunity. And that really rang true with me, because if you are out there job shadowing someone in a number of different professions, you might find out, I didn't even know that admissions was a possibility, that I was interested in that, or really screening in opportunities. Maybe you're interested in sales, and as an English major, you have excellent communication skills, social media skills. So I think that getting out there and really talking with people, connecting with people, and exploring what the working world is about it would be my number one piece of advice.
Is there often a bit of a, what's the word I'm looking for, a bit of a gap between expectations and what the job world is offering? Especially, I'm thinking about how Bowdoin emphasizes public service and doing something meaningful with your life, and then the jobs that are presented to you, at least on their face, don't seem to be full of that meaning one is seeking.
Sure, and I think that everyone approaches that in a different way. Some people will say, I need to go for the paycheck first, and that's how I'm going to approach this. Some people will take a year to take an AmeriCorps position or a fellows position to figure out what is the next step. Oftentimes, alums will call me after 3 or 4 years and say, all right, I've gotten the paycheck, I've paid off my student loans, now I'm looking for something meaningful.
And
to quickly add to that, I will also advise students, sometimes you find the meaning outside of that paid job. And so the reality is we all need to make a living, but there are other ways, volunteering in a community center, tutoring, staying connected with a group that you've already been connected with, where you can find that meaning and fulfillment.
Okay, I want to turn this around a little bit. I know the show that we've put together is about helping young people find a job, but speaking more to employers, what, Lisa, can employers expect from this generation? Are we still in millennials, or have we moved to another? And what are sort of the traits that they will see in this crop of young people coming out of college?
I think that's a great question, because the millennial generation often has been branded as Generation I. You know, they get tagged as being self-absorbed, perhaps lazy, lacking work ethic. And I think that's absolutely not true. If we think back to when we started our careers, we were all in a generational gap between those that were hiring us and being the newly employed. I think this generation really brings a lot of great skills. They're very socially aware. I think they're much more caring and compassionate, perhaps, than previous generations. They are interested in finding meaning in their work, but they also are about to become the largest generation in the workforce, and they're a huge consumer group. So I think businesses that ignore the millennials and what they bring to the table do so at their own peril. I think bringing that voice into your meetings and including that generation in meetings of all levels can help you get a better understanding of what this generation is looking for as a consumer and how it might impact your company's business and business plan.
David Chulo, I know you advise companies and people who are looking for employment of all ages and all different industries. What is the edge that somebody who is 22, 24, 25 has today over some of the other job seekers?
You know what it is? It's probably that, to build upon what you had said, was their ability to multitask and their ability to use digital media and digital computer techniques in a way that has never really been done before. You asked how companies, we advise them, they have to think differently. One of the problems we see is that senior leadership is typically a different generation, right? So either they're Gen X or they're baby boomers, and they think one way, and they've thought that way for a long time, and that's okay. That's who they are. But Gen Y has come in, or millennial generation has come in, and really thinks differently. And we don't even know what Gen Z is going to be about, which is at about 16 years old right now and coming into the workforce. We're still trying to figure that out a little bit. But the reality is that leaders have to think differently, because they don't want to do it the same old way. They want to do it their way. And to your point, my understanding is millennials just became the largest generation about 3 weeks ago. So the fact is that that's happening. They're going to take over the world, we say. That's the reality to what it is. And so, you know, people in leadership, in senior leadership, have to think differently and have to accept new ways of doing things to make that happen.
How challenging, though, is it for someone? I know that many companies use computer algorithms to screen resumes. They're looking for certain words, certain types of experience. And, you know, if you're that English major with fantastic communication skills, lots of friends, are going to end up being a fantastic salesperson. How do you even make it through that sort of first round of, gee, my job experience and skills don't exactly match the algorithm that this company is putting forward in its human resources program?
Well, I'm even going to take that up a step. You can actually Google online the fact that there's a new robot coming out to interview. a robot that's actually going to interview you, and it's going to use all the sensing technology in terms of how you react and all your biorhythms and everything that goes into actually hiring somebody. So it's not only what you answer and how you say, but how you're going to sit there and how you act. And if you're sweating to a question, it's really got to the next level in terms of hiring. But to answer your question, the reality is that the edge they have is exactly what I talk about, their ability to do things different, faster, sometimes smarter. But what they lack and what baby boomers and Gen X really can do for them is mentor them on real life. Because while the generation Y comes in and millennials come in, and we all know at 21, we all knew it all, right? We all did. Well, in fact, in some ways, they do know a lot more than the next generation or the next two generations digitally, which is critical, but they really don't know how the world works yet. And that's the edge that we still have in our generation, but they have in terms of changing our minds and making it work. So they're great to mentor.
Meg Springer, I want to read to you a Facebook post that we already have from Megan. She writes, not a question, but a comment for high school and college students. Don't wait until you graduate to start thinking of this. If faculty and staff can get the word out, it would be to take advantage of internships, applied research projects, service and leadership opportunities, all the networking you can while in the school. Go and explore. Is this a friend of yours? Go explore the career services office in your first or second year of college. Don't just show up there fall or spring term of your senior year. She writes more, but would you agree with everything she just said?
Great. Thank you, Megan. It sounds like my mother wrote that for me. we certainly see students on the first day of their freshman year coming in. And the approach that we take in career planning is sort of a three-step approach, and it's the explore, experience, pursue. So in explore, you're just starting to talk about what are you interested in, what are you passionate about, what have you done before that you thought you liked, and how are you going to go about exploring that a little bit more. So that first summer, you might be doing something to make money and volunteering just to get some exposure. But the summer after your sophomore year, chances are you've written a resume, a cover letter, you've talked with some people, you've job shadowed. That's the time to really experience something that you think you might be interested in. And whether that's through a formal internship, through job shadowing, through volunteering, you'll get that experience that can go on your resume, but it can also help you decide if that's something you're interested in pursuing. I hear from students all the time in September, they'll come in and say, Meg, I'm so glad I had that internship this summer because I never want to do that again. I hated it.
So true.
But what I do know is that I am actually very interested in going into development or fundraising. So you learn something from every experience, I think. And then by the final, between junior and senior year, it is pretty critical to have a formal internship because employers are looking for that real grounded experience that you can then apply when you're actually looking for a job. So, Megan, I think you're right on. And professionals can really help guide you through the process, reassure you. And then you mentioned networking, and I think networking is the N word. You know, it's really scary and has bad connotations for a lot of people. And what I like to say to students is it's really about connecting. So any time in your life that you've had a big decision to make, what have you done? You've probably talked to people. You've asked people, have you ever heard of this college? Have you ever heard of this sports team? And people have talked with you, and it's engaging in conversation. And I think these days, really, the number one way that I see students getting jobs or graduates getting jobs is by talking with people, asking them about their own jobs, finding out about opportunities, connections.
Great. Well, believe it or not, we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll get to your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by the Orthopedic Institute of Central Maine, committed to regaining mobility and getting rid of the pain. JointsME.org. The Maine Association of Nonprofits, uniting and strengthening the nonprofit sector through management training and advocacy. NonprofitMaine.org. And Ollie's Trolley, offering narrated daily tours of Cadillac Mountain, tickets, and more information at ollystrolley.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Israeli writer Edgar Keret. His new collection of personal essays, The Seven Good Years, spans the time between the birth of his son and the death of his father. Keret writes about being a secular Jew, the son of Holocaust survivors, and the father of a son he hopes will never have to go to war. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. For those of you who listen to MPBN in Knox, Lincoln, and Waldo counties, we're upgrading our WMEP 90.5 FM Camden transmitter and performing some much-needed maintenance at the site this week, as long as the weather continues to behave. It's a substantial project, and it means WMEP Camden will be off the air for perhaps 4 days total. We'll keep you posted. Please remember, you may be able to hear or are already hearing MPBN on 90.9 FM Bangor or 90.1 Portland, and of course, online at mpbn.net. Thank you for your patience and understanding.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, helping recent college graduates find work. With me in our studio, Meg Springer, who is Assistant Director of Career Planning at Bowdoin College. Lisa Miller is Founder and Chief Career Catalyst at C2C, College to Career. And David Chulo is President of Career Management Associates and host of the HR Power Hour radio show. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Dr. Jim DeLugos. He is president of St. Joseph's College. Dr. DeLugos, welcome to Maine Calling. You have an ad campaign going right now about the Connections program at St. Joseph's. Is that a new initiative? And what's it all about?
It is an initiative, and I'm happy to be able to spend some time with you this afternoon. Yes, the Connections program, we began with students who entered the college last fall, and it's all about networking and making connections, and exactly what you were just speaking about before the break. So we know that students who are going to be successful need to start their exploration the minute they get to college, if not earlier than that. The Connections program begins with every student who begins at St. Joseph's receives a set of college-branded business cards with their name and phone number, email address. And, of course, the purpose of business cards is to give them away. And so we've built a program where it's easy for them to make those initial set of connections, to begin that process of networking, to try to remove some of that concern about how do you do this kind of thing. So we're going to be with them from the very beginning and helping them meet people, our alums, local business leaders. It's really a chance to begin developing their own professional networks. In addition to that, when students are persistent to their junior year, they'll be eligible for up to $2,000 in college-provided funding to support some kind of experiential learning project of their own design. So the Connections not only leads them forward, but also helps them begin to think about what they want to do, what that signature experience outside the classroom will look like for them, whether it's an internship or an intensive research project or a study away. We want to help them to get that extra piece of their educational experience.
Dr. DeLugos, many families, Maine families, are really hoping to find a way to keep their young graduates here in Maine. Is this a priority for what you're doing at St. Joseph's? And I see Meg over there nodding as well.
It's absolutely a priority. You know, one of the things I hear as I go around the state and talk with business leaders is that there are, in fact, lots and lots of jobs in Maine. People just don't know where they are or how to get them or what they need to do to prepare for them. So if we can begin to connect early college students with local Maine employers and help them understand what exactly the opportunities look like in Maine, many more of them can stay in state.
Dr. Jim DeLugos, thank you for joining us today. Jim DeLugos is president of St. Joseph's College. Meg, I know that at Bowdoin, a smaller percentage of students are from Maine than at somewhere like St. Joseph's, but many would like to stay in Maine after attending college here. Do you find that to be a challenge in your office?
We actually host the Maine Employers Career Fair, where we have more employers from Maine coming to recruit our students, whether it's for summer opportunities or for postgraduate opportunities. So there are a lot of opportunities. Many young alums are staying in Maine, in Portland in particular. So it's really becoming a hub. And there's also a program through the McKean Center for the Common Good, Community Matters and Maine Fellowships, where they partner with local organizations, many of them nonprofits, to provide funded internships for the summer so students can actually intern and stay in Maine.
I'm going to go to the phones now. We're going to go to Ryan in Portland. Hi, Ryan. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a sales manager in Portland, and I actually spend a fair amount of time going out to college fairs that the colleges do a really great job putting on. And I kind of want to advocate for sales as a career, kind of a plug, if you will, because a lot of the students that I chat with kind of turn their nose up to it. Oh, I'm not a salesperson. It's nothing I could see myself doing, but there's actually a lot of good skills that you can build, even if you just start your career in sales. A lot of communication skills, just getting yourself in the business world. And especially if you can get into something, business to business, you really get a lot of exposure to different industries and maybe someplace that you'd really like to see yourself long term. But I just wanted to say, a lot of people snub their nose to sales, and I think it's a really great way, maybe an opportunity to explore that, some graduating business students may not see as a fit, but it certainly can be.
Thanks for your call, Ryan. And Lisa, does this sound familiar to you? Do you work with students who turn their nose up at the idea of sales or maybe find it intimidating?
I think it's really more the latter, that it's a little bit intimidating. I think people think that sales, you have to be a great communicator or super extrovert, when in reality, Ryan can probably attest, a lot of it's about listening skills and understanding what your customers want. He makes a great point where it's an incredible opportunity to get to see the business from a variety of perspectives and see the customers and what they're doing. And I think it also, sales helps you understand how to sell yourself, how to present yourself professionally. And it's just really a great avenue. I think it builds a lot of self-confidence, and you can measure yourself. So if you're someone that's motivated by seeing how well you do and getting constant measurement, sales is a great arena to go into.
And David, sales is often, very often, the track to management, isn't it?
No question. Sales is actually one of the highest paying professions in the world. And that's a fact. Salespeople across the world make some of the largest amounts of salary and commission there is. And that's because selling yourself is the key. It's interesting when we talk to individuals and they say, I don't feel like I can sell. I'm not a salesman. And I look at them and I say, do you talk to people? Yes. Well, do you convince others of your friends to do things one-on-one? Well, yeah, sometimes, do you convince your girlfriend, boyfriend that you want to go to a movie? I said, you're selling. Every day you're selling. You sell everything you do. And the better you get at it, the better you become. And when you have a resume and you're going in front of an employer, you're selling yourself. So this is all sales. And so when people say, well, I don't ever sell. Oh, yes, you do. You sell every single day. The minute you get up, you make decisions and you sell.
Ryan, thanks so much for calling in with your perspective. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're talking about helping young people, especially recent college grads, find that first career job. Going to Buxton now, and Bob. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi. How you doing?
Great.
I spent some years as a volunteer ambassador for the Portland Chamber of Commerce. And in that time, I saw a lot of people who were looking for jobs and coming to the chamber to network, which I would highly recommend. And don't be afraid. These meetings are open to the public. Come in, shake a few hands, ask for their cards. Write on the back of their cards something that will joggle your memory a week or two from now, and you'd be surprised how that can lead into, getting an idea of what their company's like. May not be what you like, but you got a chance to talk to them informally. It's just a great way to go. Another thing that I would strongly recommend is don't go to an interview and say, and when they ask you, well, what have you been doing since your last job? And you basically have to say, well, or mask some kind of a comment like, I've been sitting on the beach and watching TV. and sending out resumes. Well, whoopee. What I strongly recommend is as soon as you become unemployed, get a job, volunteer with Red Cross, volunteer at college offices. They always need somebody to do something. Volunteer at a church or a temple, but be able to say to the interviewer, well, I've been unemployed, but I've been working, and I got a letter of recommendation from the place where I've been volunteering, and it makes you look much more like a worker than someone who's been hanging around getting depressed. And it keeps you, by the way, with a good attitude, a good mental attitude. You still have to get up every day or every two or three days during the week, get up and go to that volunteer job.
Thanks so much for your call, Bob. Would you agree, all three of our panelists here?
Yes.
Yes, volunteering, great idea.
Yes. Great idea.
And I want to quickly just circle back. Bob supported networking also, and I think again, being an introvert myself, I know that networking, walking into a room at the Chamber of Commerce and handing out business cards can be completely overwhelming and paralyzing. And so I will say that think about this idea. Everyone has a network. All of our networks look a little bit different, but we all know we've had a coach, a Girl Scout leader, a high school counselor, a neighbor, people that you might not expect to be in your network. Start with the familiar. Start with an alum from your school. And you're not asking for a job, really. You're asking just for information. What is it that you do? People love to talk about themselves, right? And so if you ask someone, I'd like you to just tell me about how you got your job. What was your own pathway? I think that you'll really find the conversation will end up, oh my gosh, you know who you should talk to? Or you know who I want to introduce you to? Or we actually have an internship. Would you be interested in that? And so I think that that takes away the fear factor of walking into a large room full of strangers and handing out business cards.
Lisa, do you ever find there's sort of an idealistic resistance to networking, thinking, I want to get this job, you know, the right way. I don't want to get it because someone got it for me.
You hit it spot on. You hear that a lot where someone you spent your entire life as a college student trying to get to that point of independence. And so they're often very resistant to help or talking to someone else and getting suggestions. But the whole idea of making connections and networking is super important. You need to leverage who you know to get information, and understanding how to conduct an informational interview as opposed to a job interview and what the purpose is really important. An informational interview is really to learn and to make a connection with the person you're speaking with. Someone might be able to get you in the door or help you get that informational interview, but you're the one that's going to get the job. So it doesn't take away anything whatsoever from your abilities and how you got your job. So turning your back on your connections and your network, your friends, your family, your coaches, professors, especially alumni from your college, is probably losing one of the biggest attributes you have going for your job search.
All right. Well, Bob, thanks so much for calling in with your sage advice. And we are going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. We're talking about finding that first career job. Please stay with us.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Casella, committed to increasing recycling rates while reducing residential trash and landfill loads through zero sort recycling. Casella, giving resources new life. And Silly's in Portland's East End. Open at 11 Tuesday through Friday and at 9 for brunch on the weekends with vegan and gluten-free options, sillys.com.
From the moment you wake up through the chaos of your busy morning, Morning Edition is there with you.
Good morning. I'm Steve Inskeep. Protesters have been
through all you have to do, we'll bring you all you need to know tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
And you can join us for Morning Edition each weekday morning at 6 a.m. And join us at 1 o'clock following Maine Calling for the Commonwealth Club of California. Today's speaker is economist Joseph Stiglitz. Stiglitz believes that a healthy economy and a fair democracy are within our grasp. The Commonwealth Club of California coming up at 1 o'clock following Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, how can you help a recent college graduate find work? With me in our studio, David Chulo. He's president of Career Management Associates and host of the HR Power Hour radio show. Meg Springer is assistant director of career planning at Bowdoin College. Lisa Miller is founder and chief career catalyst at C2C, College to Career. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. David, before the break, we were talking about networking. Do you have networking ideas?
Sure. I got to tell you, today it is easier than ever to find out who people know and how you know people. You can use social media, whether it be Facebook, whether it be Twitter, whether it be really LinkedIn, which is the number one leading professional social media site out there today. I just recently worked with a young student who graduated from college, and he was concerned about networking. And so we went right on the computer where his network was. He had about 100 people that he knew connected on LinkedIn. But once we started going through the process of who they knew, he actually knew somebody at a company he didn't even know he knew, at a company he wanted to work at. And so there's an immediate networking connection that will pay dividends. So it is simpler today than ever. It's just knowing the process and how to mine for gold.
Gotcha. Mine for gold. I like that. Lisa, you say you really need to be prepared for two big questions. What are those?
The first one is, so tell me about yourself. It's typically the first question in any interview, and it's probably the one that college students and graduates dread the most because people aren't naturally comfortable talking about themselves. You really need to think about what your story is and what I like to call your sticky message. What's going to make you memorable with the interviewer so that they remember you in 3 hours, 3 weeks, or 3 months? And while I was doing a volunteer mock interview at Bowdoin, I interviewed this young woman who was a women and gender study major, and I asked her to tell me about herself. And she didn't really do a great job the first time through on the question. So I asked her, I said, what's one thing about you that I wouldn't know from looking at you and wouldn't likely to guess, and it's on your resume? And she told me that she rode rodeo. And it was a great response because if you think about the skills that it requires to take to ride rodeo, you need to be intuitive, think on your feet, not afraid to fall down and get back up. All great skills that an employer would love to have. So really knowing how to tell your message in a way that sticks with the employer and allows you to work in some strengths is a great way to answer, so tell me about yourself. The other question is, so why should we hire you? And I think it's really important to understand that you are trying to solve a need or a problem that an employer has. So when you answer that question, you have had that job description. You've prepared for the interview. Show what you've done, your accomplishments, and demonstrate that you have the skills from day one to be a great hire and that you can help that company solve their problem.
Okay, Meg Springer, how do you prepare college students to answer these questions?
Yeah, so I run the mock interview program at Bowdoin College, and I know from my own experience, my first 20 or more interviews were practice interviews. I didn't get any of the jobs because I thought, well, if they like me, they like me, right? I'm not going to pretend to be someone I'm not. Big mistake. I think that there's great value in practicing articulating why I am a good fit for this position and really connecting the dots. And I always advise students, show me, not tell me. So an example of that, here in our organization, we value leadership. Talk to me about yourself as a leader. An answer could be, oh, I'm a great leader. I love setting up programs and people tend to look up to me and I'm very organized. All right, that's a fine answer, probably the same answer that the other 100 candidates gave. But what about if instead I were to say, leadership is something that I actually seek out, whether it's been in high school as a leader of the Key Club, gathering donations to send to Haiti, or in the past year when I actually organized and led an alternative spring break program to homeless shelters within the greater Portland area, I find that I enjoy the challenge of meeting people, reaching out, organizing. You get the idea. So that is what Lisa was saying.
Specificity, a specific answer and not a general answer. David?
Well, you know, I'm going to build right on that because that's exactly the right question or answer, I should say, in this case. I talk about it in three parts. Anytime you answer a question, think of it three parts. What is it you're trying to get across that really will affect the employer? How'd you do it? And then what was the result, the tangible result, the takeaway result? Because the employer is going to say, okay, you can do that for me. So it's a three-part answer to everything. And I would also add that don't go longer than 2 minutes. Okay, the reality is that, first of all, you know, people have a very short attention span. And after 2 minutes, you've lost them. I don't care how interesting you are. You've lost them. That's just the reality of today's employment situation. So get to the point and make sure you get across the information you're trying to get. So what did you do? How did you do it? And what was the result and how it's relevant to them?
It's a great point, David, because typically when new college students are interviewing, they do one of two things. They're too short or they're too long with the responses. And you know you're being too short if the employer is asking follow-up questions on what they just asked.
Right. And I want to throw into that, an interview really is a two-way conversation. And so it's the opportunity for the potential employer to find out about you, but it's also your chance to find out if this is actually somewhere that you want to work. So I think that you can always turn the question around at the end and say, so those are my thoughts, but could you tell me a little bit more about leadership opportunities that are available within your organization? And I think that leaves the conversation as a very relaxed one. And you've engaged in a discussion and the employer then thinks, this is someone that I could actually work
and
with.
And build upon that, too. Know the company you're going into. Know the person. Research them on LinkedIn. Know about who you're talking with and what it's about.
The other piece of advice I would give you is always think of the interviewer as a potential friend, not the enemy. And if you can turn an interview into a conversation, you're going to be much more relaxed. You're going to find those connection points, and your true authentic self is going to come through, and you'll just be more at ease, and you will interview better.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think at the end of the interview, too, if you've had a great interview and you're really excited about this opportunity, share that. I've had a number of employers say to me, we just had a great interview, but I'm not sure if she really wants the job. And I'll say to students, you can tell them. You can say after, I was excited about applying for this, and now I really know this is right. And they'll say, I can't do that. And I'll say, well, if you don't, someone else is going to.
When I was looking for my first job, someone gave me the advice to carry stationery with you with a stamped envelope and write the thank you note as soon as you walk out the door. Is that still relevant advice?
Sure.
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting.
Electronically, yes.
Well, electronically. Okay,
I say both.
That's okay. Okay.
I say both.
I say both, too. It's interesting. People don't send mail anymore. So it actually, to take the time to write it has a little more meaning today. Depends on the level and depends on the speed you need to get an answer to. If you need to get a quick answer because there's a lot of competition for the job, quick email. By the way, again, quick email, not something long. Get to the point, maybe put a fact in it, but that's it.
Okay. And not so fast that you haven't spell checked it.
Or proofed it.
Never, ever send the same email to multiple people in the company. If you're fortunate enough to have interviewed with more than one person, make sure that you tailor your response to show something that you picked up from that specific conversation that shows you were paying attention. And definitely tell them how interested you are in the job. It's great advice.
Okay, we have Andre in Buxton. Hi, Andre. Go ahead.
Basically, I just wanted to, reiterate a couple points there. I graduated in 2012 with a history of political science degree from USM. I've traveled abroad to China and lived in China and studied in China for a year. And in the field that I hope to go into someday, mastery of the Chinese language is important. So I've kind of been, off for the last few years of school trying to build that foundation for my language. And in the meantime, I want to reiterate what someone said earlier about retail. I've been involved in retail, pretty much through college and now beyond. And now in this process, in this time, I've opened multiple stores. I've worked for corporate retail offices. The networking, from all those things, the interviewing people, understanding what's important in an interview, what was just talked about. All these skills I learned essentially through retail themselves.
Okay. Well, Andre, thanks so much for calling in. You talked about the field you want to go into someday involves, being fluent in Mandarin. What I want to ask our panel here, since we have you on the phone, is what advice do you give to that young person a few years out who's not in his or her dream job?
Well, it's interesting. Since my background is in the retail world, I will tell you that retail does provide you with incredible knowledge about people, and it is a people world. And so you ask about it's not his dream job, but he's working towards it. That's the key, isn't it? learning the basic skill sets to be able to move to the position you want to be in. Maybe you have to take extra education. Maybe you have to do other things to build it on the side that you need in whatever field he wants to go into. But he's learning a lifelong skill in terms of people, and it is a people world.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Andre. I think we can squeeze in one more call. George in Norway. Hi, George. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you? Thanks
Great.
For taking my call. I wanted to tell you that 40 years ago, when I graduated, I wanted to work for the big, prestigious company, a nice position. Well, reality hit in, and it didn't work out, sort of like today. But I took a job as an assistant planner in a company I'd never heard of before, and I worked very hard at it, and they recognized me internally. And eventually, through a couple of promotions, I ended up being the purchasing manager of the company. And I was only like 25. And that set my career path forever. And I just wanted to tell young people that you can't always hit a home run. You got to start with a single. And you just keep working hard at it. Show them that you're a good worker. And they'll probably hire you or promote you.
Well, George, thanks for your advice. And this is kind of how we started the show, isn't it, Meg?
Right. With your first job won't be your last job. So, George, I think that's a great example of getting out there and people getting to know you and your work style, and you also being humble enough to realize that you have to start somewhere, and then it'll continue down the pathway.
And I'm thinking, too, as you build your career in your 20s and 30s, to be open to possibility, to not have, isn't it an interesting balance of having your eye on the prize and being motivated to head in one direction, but also not having the blinders on and realizing when there might be opportunities coming at you that you didn't expect?
I absolutely agree with that. I started my career with Hannaford in the real estate development area and ended up having 12 different jobs with the company, including being the first expat. So I think being open to opportunities, knowing what your skills are and having them be transferable and just jumping for more. I think if you go to work every day thinking that it's a live job interview, because in many ways it is, you will be extremely successful. So go to work every day and give it 110%.
That's a great bit of advice to end the show. And to very much end the show, I'm going to end with an email from Greg. He writes, a few suggestions for the first-time job applicant. Take time to find out everything about the company you're applying to. David is nodding. Don't be arrogant or insulting. The boss may think differently than you, but they are still the boss. Ask what you can do to help the company. Don't ask what the vacation policy is and how soon you can take it. Don't bring your smartphone and look at it during the interview. You are smiling and nodding, so that's a great way to end the show today. Thank you all for being here today. Lisa Miller, founder and chief career catalyst at C2C College to Career. Meg Springer, assistant director of career planning at Bowdoin College. And David Chulo, president of Career Management Associates and host of the HR Power Hour radio show. John Keimel ran the board today. Our volunteer Tommy Bazarian answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mpbn.net/MaineCalling. While there, sign up for our podcast, which is also available on iTunes. If you enjoyed today's program, consider sharing it. There is a link on our webpage that makes sharing our programs quick and easy. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, join host Keith Shortall for a conversation about the just-released Maine Wabanaki State Child Welfare Truth and Reconciliation Commission report. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.